Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
This edition is part of our special series dedicated to the New Europe 100 network. The network run by Respublika and Visegrad Insight is part of a joint effort started together with Google, Financial Times and the Visegrad Fund some 6 years ago, and that brings together and promotes the success stories and people from the region, the people of success of the digital age, who, because of their global impact, groundbreaking expertise, unique skills, social outreach, are making this region have a different name, the New Europe. We thank the International Visegrad Fund for supporting us, and we're inviting you to listen to a series of 10 podcasts on our platform devoted to the New Europe 100 forum we have been organizing throughout October and November with speakers from the New Europe 100 network.
How deadly is the pandemic for the markets? A discussion featuring Ignacy Morawski, Spot Data, Martina Trykosko, Czysta Gospodarka, and Martin L., Gospodarskie Nowiny.
I'm Martin L. from Czech Economic Daily. I'm moderator of this session, which was called Markets Surviving COVID, How? I know that it's a kind of a tricky question now, because we are in the middle of storm, when we don't know when it will end and how it will end up in all our countries. We are supposed to look at some wider and broader perspective in terms of economics and the development of the markets and business, with a stress on the digital sphere, which is kind of a thing, at least in Czech Republic, we are quite vividly living through. At the moment, governments are too busy tackling the pandemic to worry about their fiscal deficits. However, the debt pile-ups will have to be confronted eventually. Austerity is not an option, in contrast with the financial crisis 10 years ago. So, Martina, is it where we are now in comparison maybe with the financial crisis? What's your point of view on that?
Well, I think there is nothing classic and nothing normal about the situation that we are in now. And honestly, it's a little difficult to compare where we are now to the situation in 2008. During the last financial crisis, Polish economy took it pretty well. We actually survived it with pretty good condition compared to the rest of Europe. Right now, we're more on trend, I could say. We are, as everyone else, in a recession. I don't know. There's just there's so much uncertainty in what is going to happen in the next few months, even, because the situation right now is changing very, very dynamically. I really don't like to make comparisons between what we are experiencing now and anything in the past.
Well, my next question is to Ignacy, because there are many predictions, many economists are bringing a lot of interesting numbers, but as you, as an expert working with numbers and predictions and data sets, can we now believe what the data we have, and can we make, or you, your company, make a predictions out of data we have now? Because spring there was a situation, then we had a calm over the summer. Now we have again a lot of measures in our economies. Is it possible to find out some kind of predictions, or how reliable are numbers now?
Well, there are two issues here involved. The first is what numbers and what kind of data we use for analytical purposes. And the second is how to build predictions. So answering the first issue, certainly the type of data that analysts use for economic analysis has changed. Normally, economists use monthly or quarterly data to to disentangle trends in the economy and make predictions and model the behavior of the economy. Today, we are living in a world when everything what happened 3 or 4 weeks ago is not important anymore. So looking at the data, which is 1 month behind, is sort of useless. So economists and analysts developed, I think, quite innovative approaches to the problem. For example, during the first wave of the epidemics, we looked deeply at the at such data as daily electricity demand or the daily flights aircraft data, or data about payment card transactions. These are the kind of data that banks made public, or a very interesting data sets from mobile companies like Apple or Google about movement of people. But at the same time, I have to acknowledge that the reliability of those data is limited. So, for example, if you want to make sort of a best estimate about where the economy is today, so it's always much better to use data about, for example, industrial production or retail sales than to use Google mobility data. So there is a trade-off. Either you have data which is lagging, like one month behind or one quarter behind, but is more reliable, or you have data that is sort of up to the date, up to the point today, but is less reliable. And so I think that those new approaches to data will stay with us. So in the future, even when pandemics passes away, we will use more daily data and those innovative approaches. Now, the second question is, can we predict what will happen? That is always difficult, but I think we are in a very good moment to remind that actually what's important for business, it's not prediction, but scenarios, right? Everyone is aware in the business sector that forecasts have huge so-called forecast errors. So there is a very big difference between how the economy performs in the real world and the forecast. But nonetheless, every business needs some visions of the future to make business plans. So what we do is we build scenarios. I think this is a better word than forecast or predictions. So we build scenarios which should be logical, coherent, based on data, and sort of have some probability attached. And then companies try to assess if they are prepared for both baseline and alternative scenarios. So I think it's a very good moment to remind that what forecast is for. Forecast is not for knowing what the future will bring, because we don't know. This is not there is no magic mirror in which you can see the future. But forecasts are a way to build coherent data-based scenarios. And such scenarios are updated monthly or weekly, and we do this also. So we try to inform our clients how we view the future of the economy, what are the possible paths.
I just wanted to comment on what Ignacio said, because those were some very, very good points about how uncertain data is right now, and how we really cannot count on traditional sources of data just because their collection and analysis is so slow. And one of the interesting data sources that you didn't mention is, for instance, right now in Poland, the road traffic authorities are saying that the passenger road traffic is right now decreasing. They are seeing a pretty significant drop in passenger transport, which can really mean that people are staying home more and more. However, at the same time, there's not so much of a decrease in cargo transport on roads, so the industry is still hanging on, let's say.
Well, what I wanted to add is that you can build scenarios, but you have to have some kind of a basic probability of what will happen, what will government decide to, for example, which businesses will be closed or which businesses will be restricted. And at least in case of Czech Republic, and I'm following close also situation in Slovakia, it's quite unpredictable. And businesses are complaining that they know the situation is harsh, but they need at least some kind of a stability. And what is important for them, as well as a clear-cut government communication. It's not, they know that it's necessary to react quite quickly sometimes, be very, very flexible. But if in Czech Republic we have this, you know, when in Twitter one minister will say something in the morning, the other minister will comment it on the noon, and the third minister will comment it in the afternoon, and prime minister in the evening will tell something totally different. So this is, you know, not creating space or environment for any scenarios or whatever we can call. I guess and I know that in Slovakia they are complaining about the same. But I'm not so sure how coherent in this is in, for example, Polish government in terms of communicating with business. How coherent is as a Polish government in communicating that what they are going to do, how the programs will work? What was the situation in Poland in terms of putting, you know, basic instructions to business?
Well, I think it's fairly similar, and it probably stems from the fact that every government is in Europe is overwhelmed by the dynamics of the epidemics. We could have expected that the autumn wave will be difficult, but the scale of the eruption, I think, is beyond predictions. So this is the primary reason why governments make spontaneous decisions. And uncertainty in Poland in terms of regulatory changes is obviously huge. The uncertainty is very, very, very large. The government had developed regulations to introduce gradual local lockdowns. So it divided restrictions into yellow and red. It assigned certain regulations to those yellow and red colors, and and it announced what is the level of infections which will trigger the introduction of the yellow level restrictions or red level restrictions. But in the end, it came out that we needed much harsher regulations and restrictions than were expected in those yellow and red system. So I think that there is a huge uncertainty. Partly the governments can be blamed. They don't sort of worked out and solutions to make the regulations more predictable. But on the other hand, to some extent, this is understandable. The increase in hospital in the number of hospitalizations, new infections, and deaths from COVID has overwhelmed probably every government in Europe.
Speaking about kind of long-term vision, using the EU funds as a kind of a tool, not just to save the economy immediately, but to make some kind of reforms in the kind of mid-term. A vision to change to use the, for example, digitalization, which was forced upon us in the last months. Do you see the chance of using these efforts to transform the digitalization we have experienced in different forms in our businesses, in our schools, into something more durable? In the Czech Republic, it looks like that it will be part of the game. I don't know if this kind of a notion that let's use the opportunity, even in this very horrific situation, to make some changes, or is it totally put aside by the kind of immediate management of the situation? Martina, maybe?
Well, my impression is, it might be wrong, that the government isn't really communicating this kind of a long-term strategy very clearly, if at all. However, the fact is that there has been a gigantic need for digitalization of various services. And once this happens, this will be, I hope, used in the future as well, because there's, I think, no reason to drop these solutions once they are put in place. So I think there is a huge opportunity to make some long-term changes. And I think it would be very easy to use these opportunities and to use this sort of crisis to propel this process of digitalizing, especially government services, which has been happening with more or less success. And I think that this might really bring some long-term changes as long as there's at least a little bit will in the government for that.
Well, yes, there's. I mean, I would say that we have more incentives for digitizing businesses and public sector. But the scale of the economic shock is so huge that many businesses are overwhelmed and are cutting investments expenditure even in the digital area. In general, companies slash spending on everything, including digital modernization. So I think there is a clash of two forces. On the one hand, we have much more incentives today to digitize. And I think we should obviously use that opportunity. But on the other hand, the scale of the shock is huge. And always the investment expenditure is something that is cut first, because it's the easiest item to cut on the expenditure list. So I see both chances and risks here.
In Czech Republic, there is a huge kind of sector of e-commerce. The Czechs are the Czech companies in this service are big innovators and going through some changes. So there are huge opportunities there. They are using that as an opportunity. On the other hand, the same owners of these companies in the spring wave were offering state to help with the first COVID wave, with the first to create kind of a smart quarantine system based on a cooperation of public and private sector. And after many of them, after a couple of weeks, simply gave up, because it showed that the state is not ready for such a step into the digital sphere, because the not only individual people in the ministries, but the system itself in many ministries was not prepared, was not willing to change the mindset, because you need to change a little bit the mindset. And also there was a huge debate about the online schooling. That there were schools which were using that as an opportunity, or simply preparing themselves for the autumn. They have changed the curriculum, for example, for the first graders to include some IT lessons. It depended a lot on the individual people, individual managers and individual owners, how to do that, while the state itself was not preparing. So I wanted to ask you, where do you see the possibilities or changes in Poland, or something like that happened? In Czech Republic, for example, we had a big failure because our prime minister is a big PR man, so he was promising smart quarantine, using it as a kind of magic word to which will solve everything. And then it showed that it worked only if it was backed up by the army specialists. So it didn't work in the civilian perspective. Meeting of the private and public sector in Poland working in these special circumstances? And was there a different reaction in the spring or in the autumn wave? Maybe what I didn't add is that in the autumn wave, the private sector is not so active to cooperate with the state in Czech Republic, because they have the experience from the spring that they had put a lot of energy, money into helping the state to do something, and nothing happened out of that. So now they are more working on their company's solutions, but there was a lot of will on the side of private sector to help the state, but it was wasted. To organize, for example, the systems to track, trace people who are supposed to be in the quarantine, or to help, there was a huge effort to build the ventilators in the Czech Republic. There was one ventilator built very extremely quickly, but then the state was waiting for a long time to give approval for that ventilator to be used. Now it was approved, but only after the big pressure by the media and by the by the society that we have something. So on one side, we have a lot of clever heads, a lot of people who are bringing some solutions which might be scaled up for the whole country or for part of the society to help the society to deal with the issues we have. But on the other hand, state is not prepared to accept such a solution to include it into the system. And from my point of view, it doesn't give a good sign into the future that our societies will be able to adapt on the new digital economies.
When I listen to your to what you say about Czech Republic, I think we had fairly similar issues. You know, the private sector is always faster, so it proposes solutions that are maybe more innovative, but the public sector is always more conservative. So, for example, recently we had a conflict between private hospitals and the government. Private hospitals proposed that they could accept not COVID patients, for example, for heart surgeries and this kind of stuff very quickly, but the government didn't respond, right? So there are those kind of, you know, fights between the public and private. But my view is the following. I think, you know, the public sector is like the oil tanker. And people expect it to be like the kayak or a yacht. It's impossible. It's not how bureaucracy works. So this is an oil tanker that does not turn very fast. It is not well suited for fast turnarounds. So I wouldn't expect any dynamic innovations from the public sector to happen very quickly. Although, you know, when I work with the public sector in Poland, I see many things changing, I would say, below the surface. So normally people do not observe it, do not see it. To give you an example, when the epidemic started, many European countries very quickly started publishing, introduced the high-frequency data on mortality, general mortality in the society, because the data on COVID mortality it doesn't have high reliability, right? Because of the testing issues and lags and this kind of things. So statistics offices in various countries, including Italy, United Kingdom, France, as early as April, started publishing weekly data about total mortality in the society so that researchers could see what is the true scale of the health problem. In Poland, we didn't have that tool at the beginning. They introduced those kind of data. They introduced procedures to gather those data, to publish those data. I would say that the Polish statistical office closed the technology gap in this very small niche. And I can see many of those small changes around in various sectors of the administration. They are not put together to form a big picture of a huge digital revolution. This is a slow motion. I wouldn't expect the public sector to be a prime innovator in the economy. It never happens.
But I was speaking about kind of an emergency situation and implementing more quickly some solutions which are offered by the private sector. That was basically my idea.
Governments in whole Europe were under huge pressure to make very fast decisions. And if you remember decisions about masks or tests, there was a huge public pressure in March to make purchasing orders for masks and ventilators and tests. And in the end, in April, it came out that many of those supplies from China or Asia were useless because the government acted very, very fast and made bad decisions. So then later on, there was a huge pressure on government and a lot of complaints that the government made bad decisions. So there is a trade-off between making fast decisions and making good decisions. And I think that the government is always on the safe side. They prefer to make slow decisions, but I would say safe at the same time. And I agree with your point that the cooperation between private and public is sort of is facing a lot of challenges, and it was a hurdle during the last couple of months. But it's not, you know, I didn't expect anything innovative here to happen.
You're listening to the Visegrad Insight Podcast special New Europe 100 edition. Follow us for more podcasts from this series, where we talk to those who share courage for innovation and speak on big ideas. Check our New Europe 100 publication series at visegradinsight.eu. And follow our social media. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter and endorse us on your favorite podcast platform.
Let's look at the private digital sector. Many of startups in Prague, everybody is now thinking about going digital, and that they are going into the more digital economy. They are offering their services worldwide. They are not only in the e-commerce sector, but also in this B2C sector, and to offer the digital solutions to different companies. How is the mood or in the Polish digital sector in this regard, or is it like business as usual, only scaling up because of everybody sitting at home and using Hopin or whatever instrument you can imagine?
Well, I think it is definitely scaling up, but in a very big capacity in some cases. Allegro, which is the e-commerce company in Poland, just went on the stock market recently, and it doubled its market value in the scope of, I think, a week. So they are growing very quickly. There are other companies that are also thriving in this situation, but I keep coming back to one example of a company that is in theory digital, but had some huge problems in during the first wave. We have a startup called Booksy, which is one of the biggest startups in Poland right now. And they were really in trouble in March because their business model is providing booking services to traditional service providers such as hairdressers, massage therapists. And because these services got closed for some time in the spring, their business just was very much in danger, and they had to, I think, fire some employees. They did bounce back, but still, even though this is a very, very digital product, they were so tied to the brick and mortar services that they were in trouble. So this all really depends on what is the exact nature of this digital business.
Wasn't there anything in the, let's say, this digital automotive industry in Poland? There was a new introduction of the new electromobile just before the pandemics came. Is it just, you know, government showing that they are doing something? I know that this government is very electromobile keen, and they like the topic. Some of the economists put on the table the idea that the EU funds, recovery fund and some other funds, will not help us to change the nature of our industries, because they will kind of freeze the employment, the manufacturing we have, but they will not put this in the spotlight of the new trends, energy deal and some other buzzwords which are around. One thing is to show something, and the other thing is to be able to produce something, to scale it up to some extent. How is this thinking going on in Poland right now, in the kind of shadow of the pandemic immediate measures?
Well, to me, the hypothesis that the European Union funds will harm the economy, but because they will freeze the employment in the old type businesses, is very controversial. I think that during the crisis, you obviously have. And incentives to reallocation of resources. But if the companies are hardly hit, you can also have production potential being destroyed. And I think that the second risk is more important. So obviously, by helping companies, you freeze employment to some extent, not 100%, because there is still an unemployment increase in Poland, right? So there is a labor force which is released and which can change sectors. And everyone who is acting in any business feels that the labor market is less tight today than it was 1 year ago. So I think there are still incentives for labor to switch between sectors. But in general, I think that the idea that, you know, public support harms the economy because it freezes the structure is controversial. I wouldn't agree with that. I think it's probably the other way around. It saves the production potential. But going into the core of your thinking, do we have any, you know, innovative industrial projects that will push the economy into the new digital era? I would say that it is a process that will gradually progress, and I would not expect any revolution today. Probably the epidemics will fasten some processes, but only some of them. When you look at the automotive sector in Poland, we are the only country among larger European countries which has the production in the automotive sector in August with positive year-on-year dynamics. So the production in automotive industry in August in Poland was higher than the last year. Why was that? Probably because we produce simple parts, which are not hit by the crisis as much as ready-made cars or engines or more complicated, I would say, parts of the car. I think in Poland we are in this crisis, the same as the last one, saved to some extent by the fact that we are on the low levels of technological development. This might seem paradox, but this is how it works. So 10 years ago, it was very rare, for example, that the German company would switch a supplier from the German one to the Central European one or Polish one. Today it is quite common that companies in the Western Europe, which are under financial pressure, are switching suppliers from the local one to the one that are located in Central Europe. And that's why Poland today is the third largest industrial supplier to Germany, even larger than Italy. So, obviously there are debates in Poland about whether this industrial structure is optimal, whether we are not stuck on the low level of technological development. But I don't agree with those who claim that we are not progressing technologically enough. The progress is not well visible for somebody who is analyzing the economy from the macroeconomic perspective. But if you look at what companies do, you always see some technological progress, and it is fast. To give you an example, there is a company in Poland which produces metal steel sheets, right? Like aluminium sheets or steel sheets, which are used for various industrial purposes. Now, 15 or 20 years ago, they produced very simple metal sheets that were used for very simple designs in the German industry. Today, they produce metal sheets that are used by very advanced systems in German cars. So you see the technological progress. This is not the digital progress, maybe, but you see the technological progress. And the labor efficiency is growing steadily. And this example, you can see in various companies, that they produce slightly more complicated products than a decade ago. And I think that the problem is more with economists. Economists would like to see fast progress incentivized by the state, some kind of intelligent policy. And I think that economists in general put too much, I would say, weight on the role of public policy. I think that the progress is visible on the industrial level. It is a gradual process. It will be fastened to, or it will be quickened by the epidemics to some extent, but you cannot expect the revolution. This is a slow process. So another example, right? We in the automotive sector, Poland is has specialized in rather low-tech parts, car parts. But on the other hand, you have more and more factories which produce batteries for the electric cars. And these factories grow and increase production dynamically. And I think that in the future, they will form at the base of the new kind of automotive sector in Poland. So I, looking around, you can see a lot of progress. But it's this is not a rocket process, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that maybe if we look back in like 3 or 5 years, we might think that yes, well, this was this the change really was happening and there was a revolution, but it's not something that we're going to see day to day from this everyday perspective.
You mentioned also unemployment, how that is gradually going up, because in Czech Republic and as well in Slovakia, we have witnessed some kind of strange thing that in everybody was afraid in the spring, and but during the August, September, in both countries, it went rather down than up. And many companies are saying that the governments must keep these Kurzarbeit schemes, which are in different modifications being here in Czech Republic and as well in Slovakia, being kept. How is it in Poland with such a schemes? And what's the actual actual level of unemployment?
I think the unemployment level for September is 6.1%, and it's been rising slowly. I'm not sure if there's a rise compared to August. It's really hard to say how that's gonna turn out. But I do know that some economists are saying that the levels of unemployment that are registered right now in Europe are actually not realistic. They're actually there is a certain level of hidden unemployment, which is caused by exactly by those government programs for keeping jobs, because as soon as those programs will end, those jobs will be terminated.
Because I know in Poland it was traditionally the big fear, especially in some regions, of losing the job and big unemployment. So now it's not the topic which would be like number one when people think about the economic side of the crisis.
I don't think so. I think we've been having very very low unemployment for the last couple of years. We entered this crisis at a pretty good place. So it's not, I don't think it's that bad yet.
I think that the unemployment reaction to the crisis so far has been surprisingly moderate. So the unemployment rate increased by around 1 percentage point. Obviously, as Martina rightly mentioned, the unemployment measure is not very reliable in terms of demonstrating the scale of the shock to the labor market. But the truth is that whatever indicator you look at, the situation in the labor market became less tight, but it is still not an employer's market, right? So still the workers may feel quite confident about their jobs. And if you compare, for example, the current crisis with the financial crisis, there is a huge difference. So during the financial crisis, there was a shock and then a long reaction. So unemployment increased and then kept increasing for 2 years. Now it stopped increasing after 3 months. So I think that the reaction is surprisingly moderate. But obviously, there is a huge uncertainty around the second wave. I think it will be harmful for the economy, and unemployment rate will increase. Although still, my view is that this is not as bad as the financial crisis.
Now, this topic started to be also being discussed here in Czech Republic, that we are speaking about big automotive factories with a couple of thousands of employees, that they will get these quick tests. The big companies can be tested like that, that, for example, government will provide people to test and the company will buy the tests or something like that. This is all on a discussion. So what I see is that the businesses are preparing for long-term solutions, how to work with COVID for some time, because clearly there will not be enough vaccines for next 2 years for everybody. So the businesses will have to learn how to work with that. So to be less dependent on the government decisions because they are so unpredictable. So I think that what we are going on is a kind of a period where we will be living with the virus, and we have to learn how to work and how to live with that. Any final word? Except wishing everybody stay healthy, stay safe.
The title of our discussion is Markets Surviving COVID, How? So maybe some optimism at the end. So contrary to the financial crisis, I think that today uncertainty is lower. We can expect that this pandemic will be controlled in the end, either through vaccine. The second thing is that we will find an equilibrium in this pendulum from moving to harsh restrictions then to loosening them up. We will find the equilibrium, the right point of managing the society. And I think that within 12 months, the problem of epidemics will be over. We will be adapted. We will have new strategies. We either have a vaccine or we have a right way to manage the epidemics. And this vision that it's 12 months and over, and the support of the governments in terms of fiscal stimulus and monetary stimulus, I think that we live in a very dark time, and the hit to the GDP will be very severe this quarter. But the expectations can be stabilized by the more positive views for the future.
Thank you very much, Ignacy, for optimistic view in the end. As I said, first stay healthy, stay safe, and enjoy life as it is.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Visegrad Insight podcast on the New Europe 100 Forum, co-funded by the International Visegrad Fund.